Okay, pretty full house here. It makes me happy that so many of you are interested into security topics, and I hope I can meet your expectations and maybe tell you something new or interesting in this talk. Before I start, maybe I should note that my name is Sebastian, and I work for the company Lemontree, and we are pretty small team and contractor of the Center for Digital Sovereignty in Germany, so I'm a bit biased maybe because I work together with the colleagues on a lot of the things I will present to you, so maybe just for transparency at that point. I would guess a lot of you guys have heard about one of the recent attacks on the software supply chain in the last weeks, month, years, whatever. And maybe you noticed that it's also getting noticed in media that is not focused on IT anymore. So even in the evening news or something, this can be a topic nowadays. And one of the last big things for those of you that read or viewed the movie Dune, movies Dune, you will be familiar with the name Shai-Hulud, so the sandworms from this story. And there was an attack where initially an NPM package was compromised and a worm that replicated itself, so it stole credentials from the machines where it got installed and tried to replicate in another package and another package and so on. Pretty nasty thing that made it like pretty clear and accelerated that whole topic. And unfortunately, it's not a single shot thing, it seems to be a pattern. So, and if you look on the lower right headline, it's from 2021, so it's not a really new thing, I would say, but as said, it's getting more extreme, I would say. And if you look, for example, the OpenSSF has the malicious package database repository where they list packages from that we know that are really just malicious. So there's malware inside and so on, so really malicious packages. And around summer 2025, we had this plot here about the numbers, and it was like a linear increase, I would say. So every year there were more packages that we know that are malicious, and then Shai-Hulud hit it, and we now have this massive increase here in 2025, and that makes a bit of a rainy day when you look outside of the window as developer looking at 2026. And the question is, what can we do about that? So what can we do about that, and what is public administration doing about that? And typically public administrations are not that progressive in every part, I would say, or the ones that lead technical development, but I would say there are some good initiatives. I also would say that a lot of you guys will have heard the nice buzzwords DevSecOps and shift left. So next to that, there are great buzzwords. There are some pretty good concepts behind that. So the basic idea is that we would try to automate stuff and that we try to do things early and that we don't want to do security in the end or as an additional thing. We want to integrate it in our development process, and we also want to do it pretty early, so when we plan a new feature, when we design something, we want to keep security in mind. And as said, we want to try to automate things, so we can do stuff like secret scanning, looking for leaked secrets in our Git history. It happens, the best developer, hopefully development token gets committed or something. You can check that pretty easily and automate it. Or you can look for obvious bad practices inside your code using static application security testing and so on. And one big thing is dependency analysis. So you all maybe know the number from the Linux Foundation, 80 to 90% of a typical software project are based on open source dependencies. So it's a huge thing. We have to look at that and have to check there are known vulnerabilities for those dependencies. What can we do about it? And if we recap how vulnerability management usually works, we have to answer several questions. So in that example, we initially have identified, oh, using some scanner or whatever, we have a critical CVE in one of our libraries in our dependency tree that we are using. And then we have to answer the question, okay, if libb, there's this known vulnerability, is libA affected of that? And if so, is our direct dependency, React.js, affected of that? And if so, are we using the vulnerable parts of React.js in that example? So several questions we have to answer. And I would say the last one, so for our direct dependencies, is often kind of easy. So you have decided to use a dependency, installed it, and you're using it on an everyday basis. You know what you are doing with that dependency, so it's more easy to find out or to answer this question than for things hidden inside your dependency tree. So the further it gets down in your dependency, I would say it's harder to answer that questions. And it would be pretty great if we could share this workload. So if there would be a way that if somebody did that part for a subtree or something, or a project is doing it for their part and I'm using that project inside the chain, if we could share this workload and this information assessment results that were already done. And fortunately, there is a way to do that. It's a so-called vulnerability exploitability exchange format. It's a machine-readable format that allows to share this assessment result somebody has hopefully done. And in combination with the SBOM, so the Software Bill of Materials, that answers what's inside the software, we can combine that with the WEX to share to our customers and users and consumers of our software what are the results of our assessment. So we can share what's inside, which dependencies we are using, and combine also the answers for known vulnerabilities of that package. What's the result? Are we affected or not? And now I want to switch over to the public administration part, because there this was identified or tried to do in parts. So as other speakers today in this dev room told, the public administration in Germany relies in many parts on container applications and operation through container images. And there are also some like policies like a cloud strategy and things like that push this even further to rely more on containerized workloads. And therefore, the tenders identified, or the public sector identified, it would be pretty cool if we have a collection of images where this assessment were already done and where we can share this information and take a bit of the burden for the users off for the dependency management, vulnerability management. And of course, fortunately, was also said that it has to be transparent and open source, and therefore is not restricted in ways of reuse to public sector, so everybody can reuse it. But it's an initiative made from the public sector and needs of the public sector. And the working title, I would say, I don't know, is the container.gov.de website, where you can find these images. So there are images provided, minimized, hardened, base images, and application images that you can use, all open source license. And this is the interesting part. They come attested with SBOMs and vulnerability exploitability exchanges. So all this information, what's inside and what's about vulnerabilities for this components inside are maintained and attested to the images. And also there's a requirement you have to comply with to get listed on this page, that you have to be, or your image has to be, free of unhandled, high, or critical known vulnerabilities. Unhandled in that case means it's okay if there's a high CVE remaining in your image, but you have to state something about that. Inside your VEX there must be a justification why it's there, or you have to have handled it. And in addition, all images are signed and so on. As it's an open source initiative. Contributions are very welcome, so if you look at it and have ideas, feedback, want to contribute something, it's very welcomed. And you can find all that on the Open Code platform. What's Open Code? Open Code is another interesting thing from the public sector. It's basically GitLab with services around it. So the Zendesk is providing a space where the public sector can develop open source software together and also provide services around it, like runner infrastructures that you can run your CI/CD pipelines, support services, discussion rooms, and so on. So everything that you need for a collaborative and open source development. And it's, yeah, I would say the building block below, because it's built on there, the runner infrastructure is used to build these images and so on. And another thing we need to look at is the vulnerability management. So as stated, all these images have to be free or have to have handled vulnerabilities classified high or critical. And we need to do vulnerability management for that and need a tool for that. And this is where the DevGuard project comes into place. And the mission or vision of the DevGuard project is to make security or secure development more easy for everybody. And Shannon Leeds, the founder of the DevSecOps Foundation, once said, everyone is responsible for security, and that is totally right, but we have to enable that, because developers and engineers maybe are not that deep into security topics, because they have to do and focus on other things, have to do their development work, and in many computer science studies and so on, you can go around that topic pretty good, unfortunately, and therefore we try to make it easy to get these things done. And how we do that? In the first step, we need to know what do we have. So we have to have a look on our project and do some scans, or even a best case, you already know what's inside, you already have a good knowledge of your project, and maybe already have an SBOM, for example, to start and check for known vulnerabilities inside your dependencies. But there are also these other typical DevSecOps steps you may want to consider, like secret scanning and so on. And the DevGuard project does not develop scanners itself. It just curates a list and pre-configures them and makes them usable in reusable CI components, GitHub actions, and so on, that you can easily integrate that into your project. And after we have identified what's inside, we can start with the management part. So one central thing of that is that you have a possibility for vulnerability management, and that you get listed with things or known vulnerabilities for packages that you are using, and of course get more details on these findings, like the official descriptions. I think it's unfortunately not that good readable. And you also get details on where it's located inside your dependency graph and so on. So what's the path to the vulnerable components, and also get supported with prioritization. So up here you see a risk score, and typically a CVE, so a known vulnerability, is assigned with the so-called CVSS, a common vulnerability scoring system. An indication is this something really bad or not so important at the moment and so on. To help you where to start. And the CVSS standard itself says you have to refit it to your situation, your security requirements. You have to enrich it with current timely information, like are there exploit POCs available, things like that. And you have to refit this criticality score to help you to prioritize. And then you can do the typical handling options, like maybe it's a false positive, unfortunately, maybe you have to accept the risk, you can fix the risk, and so on. You can do your normal vulnerability management. Next to the dependency part, there's also the part with code risks. So everything that's inside your direct code, so that resides from secret scanning and disaster analysis, and so on. canal. And one really important thing we try to consider is to base that all on open standards and open exchange formats. So as stated several times, there are basically the two, I would say, most important or oft most used formats, the so-called SBOM, so what's inside your project, and the VEX, and also for static analysis results, the RIE format. And all that you can ingest into DevGuard and also get out of DevGuard. So it's really based on these open exchange formats, so that you can use your scanners as long as they provide these formats. So back to the connection with OpenCode and the hardening of these container images. OpenCode as a platform service has deployed DevGuard. So every user of OpenCode can freely use a DevGuard instance and do their vulnerability management there. So you don't have the need to set up tools yourself and so on. So it's just provided as a security service, platform service to you. You can just use your existing account to log in there, and it even synchronizes all your repositories directly so that you find yourself, you find your repositories directly, and you don't have this setup burdens. And the most interesting part is that when you're doing your vulnerability management there, and do all that I've shown before, you have like an, without an extra step, you get this VEX format in the end. So you just ingest your information, you do your vulnerability management, and without an extra step, you are compatible in the with the VEX format, and also the CSA format is another exchange way, basically also building on the VEX format, to share your assessment results with your users. And this is where it's connected to this container initiative. So all container images are managed, or the vulnerabilities of these container images are managed by DevGuard. And also the attestation in the end is connected there. So the pipeline that builds these images in the last step fetches your assessment results from the OpenCode DevGuard instance and attests them to the image. Also with this link connection there, what's pretty interesting, because you don't want to have a snapshot. You don't want to have this thing that you built this image 1 week ago, and there you had three assessment results inside your VEX, and maybe inside or during the week there's also happening something, and you have continued providing information, or for example marked another vulnerability that was found later as false positive. You can get the most recent or most latest information by just querying this link. And last but not least, I want to do some advertisement for other cool features we just implemented inside there. Inside DevGuard is a dependency proxy feature, so in that case nothing special and at first look, but the pretty cool thing is that all these known malicious packages we have seen in the start, like especially as during Shai-Hulud attacks and so on, are connected, or your installs are checked against that. So if you have a JavaScript or Go or Python project, you can simply download your packages through this proxy. And packages that are known malicious packages are just blocked from install before something could happen. And you also are provided with some interesting details about your dependencies. So even if there is no vulnerability inside one of your dependencies, it's maybe also interesting to have an overview, like when was it last time published, where it's located in my dependencies, what's about the repository. We had another talk 2 hours earlier about the batch program of Zendesk. It's a bit connected to the scorecard approach of OpenSSF, so you maybe want to have some insights about the repositories behind these dependencies you are using, and some other interesting stats. Yeah, and there's even more inside. I don't want to go in detail about that, but there are pretty interesting talks around here today and tomorrow about things like Intoto, CISA, and the named attestations and so on. And all that are concepts we try to base this whole approach on and to use and make them more easy and accessible. And here you can find DefGuard. As stated, it's an open source project, so you can check it out. It's an OWASP incubation project, and I would finish here, and we would love to hear your feedback, get impressions, try to contribute even with ideas, make some issues and so on. And I'm open for some questions now.
So you have a proxy. Why not integrate directly into the individual tools? That way you get more reach, because it seems like installing a proxy is a lot more work for individual users.
I would say, yeah. So the question was regarding the dependency proxy. If it's a lot of work for individual users, and I would say yes. As an individual, it would be pretty annoying to set it up itself, but using it, it's pretty easy. You just can say in your .npm rc config, I want to use it, and that's it. So it's a one-line command. And as stated, there is a public instance. There are several other public instances. Maybe your company, corporation, organization, whatever, wants to set up that. And then it's it has a high impact for a central thing, I would say. But maybe I got your question not that right.
Why not directly integrate into NPM, for instance?
Yeah, that would be great. It would be great if the registries themselves would do that. But unfortunately, at the moment, we don't have that situation, so we have to help out, right? And I think OpenSSF is reporting their findings to the registries, like saying, okay, we know this is a malicious package, maybe we want to block it or remove it from the registry, but take some time, it's not always working. Yeah. Okay. No more questions. I take it as a good sign. Would say thank you, and have a nice second day tomorrow.